Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Pariskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Mathalul ladhina yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabilillah كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every year. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news. The U.S. city of Philadelphia is put under nighttime curfew again amid protests over the fatal police shooting of an African-American man. Iran describes the U.S. as a rogue regime that brags about stealing after Washington claimed it has seized and sold an Iranian oil shipment bound for Venezuela. Also ahead, a rescue and search operation is underway in Turkey's Izmir province following Friday's powerful earthquake that killed over 24 people. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, the U.S. city of Philadelphia has been put under nighttime curfew again amid ongoing protests over the fatal police shooting of an African-American man. This is the second time the curfew has been imposed in Philadelphia this week. National Guard troops have already been deployed there, with the city's mayor saying that forces will also be sent to critical government buildings and other infrastructure. The demonstrations began on Monday after 27-year-old Walter Wallace was killed by two officers who claimed he was approaching them with a knife. The victim's family says he was suffering from mental health problems. Since then, more than 200 people have been arrested and a number of officers have reportedly been injured. Some businesses say they have been looted and vandalized during the rallies. U.S. presidential candidates have campaigned in the battleground states in the Midwest. The Democratic candidate Joe Biden has once again slammed President Donald Trump for his handling of COVID-19.
This is the same man who weeks ago when he was told we're losing 1,000 lives a day. You remember what he said? He said, it is what it is. That's thoughtful. Well, it is what it is because he is who he is. Donald Trump has waved the white flag and surrendered to this virus.
Biden pledged to enact a plan that would halt the spread of the virus if he gets elected. He also slammed Trump for holding crowded rallies that spread the disease. He said Trump refuses to listen to science when addressing the pandemic and accused him of fueling division and discord in the country.
Trump once again downplayed the pandemic and said the country is doing better despite surging infections in the past weeks.
And we are rounding the turn on the pandemic with or without vaccine. We have the vaccine. It's going to come. But even without it, we're rounding the turn. Seniors will be first in line to get it, and it will be available free.
Trump criticized Democratic governors who imposed restrictions to slow the spread of the virus. He also accused doctors of profiting from COVID-19 deaths. A national poll conducted by Reuters Ipsos shows that Biden leads Trump by 10% due to widespread disapproval of the president's handling of the coronavirus. The U.S. presidential election will be held on November 3rd. And the number of COVID-19 infections keeps surging in the United States, which remains the world's worst-hit country by the novel coronavirus. Based on a Johns Hopkins University tally, the total number of coronavirus infections in the U.S. has surpassed 9 million. Officials also reported its highest one-day record of confirmed cases since the beginning of the pandemic, with over 94,000 infections. The country has witnessed a jump in the number of cases in 47 states, with its total fatalities nearing 229,000. President Donald Trump has been repeatedly criticized by his Democratic rival Joe Biden for mishandling the pandemic ahead of the election. Press TV's correspondent Colin Campbell says the Trump administration is not following experts' advice and people are dying as a result.
Proper response to control it. And it doesn't seem like the Trump administration is continuing in the way that you would expect an administration to do in protecting the American lives. This is a president who's more concerned about re-election than he is about controlling the virus. And this isn't just an editorial. This is more or less what the conversation is coming from the campaign trail. When he talks about, when he goads the media in talking about COVID-19, when he makes fun of his rival, the former Vice President Joe Biden, running for the presidency as well, and the fact that he wears masks all the time, and he talks about how he overcame COVID-19, so therefore people should not let it control their lives. So therefore, this is a president who would rather look at the re-election next week, rather than looking at the seriousness of this, the more than 228,000 people who have died in connection with coronavirus, the number of rising cases. No state in the whole country is going in the proper direction when it comes to the number of cases. We're not seeing a decline. We're only seeing the numbers go up. This is not a good indication, especially when you have other countries who have used models that have been recommended by the Centers of Disease and Control. They have lower numbers than we do. Even if you look at per capita, they have lower numbers than we do. So this is a government that is not even following the expert advice of the people within its own nation. Of course, this is problematic, and people are dying as a result.
Tehran has branded the U.S. as the pirate of the Caribbean after Washington claimed it has seized and sold an Iranian oil shipment bound for Venezuela. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman reiterated that the oil did not belong to Iran, but highlighted that somebody else's oil has certainly been stolen. Saeed Khatibzadeh described the U.S. as a rogue regime that brags about stealing. The oil shipment in question was delivered by private companies and non-Iranian flagged vessels, but the U.S. insists that the shippers masked the real owner of the cargo. Iran has sent two flotillas of fuel tankers to Venezuela by Iranian flagged vessels. Professor of Economics David Barkin says the U.S. seizing of an oil tanker in the Caribbean and the selling its oil is a criminal act and an absolute violation of international law.
This, what is going on in the, in with this seizing of the oil is just an absolute criminal violation of international law in all its forms. And this is obviously going to go into international tribunals now, because regardless of who is the owner of it, someone is going to claim theft. And the implications of that in the international tribunals is very, very strong. But unfortunately, the Trump regime is absolutely impervious to the kinds of international institutions and any repercussions that might take place.
Iran's deputy foreign minister says the country's initiative for the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict is aimed at establishing lasting peace in the disputed region. Sayed Abbas Araghchi made the comments after visiting Turkey, the last leg of his regional tour that also took him to Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Russia. Araghchi said Iran's peace plan is based on international law, which urges the handover of occupied lands, among other demands. The diplomat said the initiative was welcomed positively by the four countries he traveled to. Araghchi said he had constructive talks during his trip. Armenia and Azerbaijan have been engaged in fierce fighting over Nagorno-Karabakh since late last month. Yerevan seized control of the mountainous region of Baku in a 1990s war. The region is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan. Search and rescue operations are in full swing following a deadly earthquake that jolted parts of Turkey and Greece. Rescuers are digging through heavy blocks of concrete in search of survivors from Friday's tremor that leveled buildings and killed at least 26 people. The quake caused a mini tsunami on the Aegean island of Samos and a sea surge that turned streets into rushing rivers in a Turkish town. Much of the damage occurred in and around Turkey's Aegean resort city of Izmir. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the epicenter of the magnitude 7 earthquake was some 30 kilometers off the coast of Izmir at a depth of 10 kilometers. Elsewhere, the Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has condemned the Nice attack, saying Islam prohibits such killings and called for international legislation which prohibits defaming any sanctity. He also criticized France for its double standards in issues related to freedom of speech.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah strongly denounced the latest crime committed in France while stressing that Islam prohibits the killing of the innocent. He said all Muslims agree on glorifying and defending the dignity of Prophet Muhammad, yet they reject blaming every individual crime on Islam.
It's wrong for France or any other side to put the blame for a crime committed by a specific person on a person's religion, or to put the blame on the followers of the same religion of the person who committed the crime. If the criminal is a Muslim, no one has the right to put the blame on Islam, or to put the blame on Muslims, whether in France or anywhere else in the world.
Hezbollah's leader called on France to reevaluate their stances and policies to see where they are responsible for the current crimes.
There's a Takfiri terrorist ideology which endorses killing for mere differences in religion, ideology, politics, or disagreements on any detail, and they commit monstrous crimes. You protected this ideology, the Americans, the U.S. administration, the French officials, the European officials. You protected them. You gave them all your support. You facilitated their infiltration into Syria and Iraq. You helped fund and arm these groups until they had fighting capabilities. Now you're surprised that their groups have behead people?
Observers stress that it is the same policy that created Daesh that is now creating that hatred against Islam.
The West needs to see what they made. They made the groups that behead people and bomb churches and mosques, that kidnap and massacre people. They made them, and they are the ones moving them and giving them media coverage and conferences and funding them. And even before the creation of these terrorist groups like Daesh, the biggest terrorist act in human history committed by the West was establishing Israel in the region on the land of Palestine. That was the basis of all terror.
Lebanon has been one of the countries where anger is mounting over France's anti-Islam rhetoric. Protesters held a rally facing the residence of the French ambassador, denouncing the French president's defense of offensive caricatures of Prophet Muhammad.
Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said France and the West harbor the same Takfiri terrorism, which is committing crimes in Europe and all over the world. Sayed Nasrallah called on France to address the roots of the problem instead of making anti-Islam accusations. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
and Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have held the rally against the blasphemous cartoons of the prophets of Islam, as well as French president's anti-Islam remarks. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon brings us more from the besieged enclave.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip protested following the Friday prayer against France over the publication of the offensive cartoons of Prophet Muhammad. The event was part of the Day of Rage rallies in Palestine against France and the French president. Protesters slammed French President Emmanuel Macron for his support of secular laws that allow blasphemous cartoons to be published under the pretext of freedom of speech. People also vowed to sacrifice their lives for the sake of their prophet.
Macron and his followers are nothing but a bunch of infidels who enjoy insulting Muslims and the great prophet of Islam. Those enemies of Islam must understand that attacking our prophet is an attack on all Muslims, and we will protect our prophet with our lives.
Hamas has vehemently condemned the support of French officials for the derogatory cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad.
As we condemn these heinous, blasphemous cartoons against our prophet, we also tell the Zionist enemy that Muslims around the world will rise up to defend the Aqsa Mosque the same way they rose up to defend our prophet.
Protests have been held across the Muslim world to condemn Emmanuel Macron's anti-Islam remarks and the blasphemous cartoons. Several Muslim countries have also boycotted French products. Some protesters in Gaza believe that the recent normalization deals between the Israeli regime and some Arab countries, especially in the Persian Gulf region, have encouraged anti-Islam sentiments in Western countries.
We are here to prove our allegiance to Islam's prophet and unite against any insult to him. Normalization with Israel has encouraged the French president to attack Islam and Muslims, making him think that the Muslims are weak.
Observers say that Macron's anti-Islam remarks will only endanger peace and stability around the world.
People here believe that attempts to defend Islam are bound to fail, and that the Muslim world will undoubtedly overcome such attacks. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
The European Union says it is closely following the rapidly deteriorating health condition of hunger-striking Palestinian detainee Maher El-Akhras. In a statement, the European Commission's Foreign Affairs spokesman, Peter Stanner, reiterated what he called the bloc's long-standing concerns about Israel's extensive use of detention without formal charges. He said about 350 Palestinians are currently being held in Israeli jails under the so-called administrative detention. The European Union urged Israeli authorities to fully respect international humanitarian law as well as its human rights obligations towards all prisoners. Akhras was detained by Israel on July the 27th. He has been on hunger strike for more than 90 days now to protest his arbitrary detention. Following the recent rise of violence and bloodshed in Afghanistan, calls for repealing the bilateral security agreement between Kabul and Washington have increased. Afghanistan's nation and government say the country's current security situation proves that the deal is ineffective. They blame the U.S. for not adhering to its commitments under the deal.
Violence has surged across Afghanistan over the past weeks, with attacks and blasts killing hundreds of civilians in the country. Based on a recent UN report, some 6,000 Afghan civilians were killed or maimed in Afghanistan within last 8 months. The UN blames the Taliban for the violence and for much of the civilian casualties, just as the Afghan government holds the militant group responsible. The armed wings of the Afghan government stressed that they are trying their best regarding their missions and responsibilities to protect civilians. Afghan locals also praise the efforts of Afghan military forces in pounding terrorists. But in the meantime, they blame the U.S. for not properly implementing the bilateral security agreement between Kabul and Washington. The bilateral security agreement was signed between Afghanistan and the United States back in September 2014. Now, many Afghans name the deal as ineffective regarding the security situation in the country. This is one of the reasons behind people's call for the revocation of the agreement.
The agreement has proved to be futile and ineffective on the security situation in Afghanistan. Terrorist groups are challenging Afghan forces in different fronts across the country, despite the strong resistance of government troops.
I think it's better for our government pull out of the agreement, because it has proved to be not in line with our interests so far. The rising violence and war claim the lives of our beloved ones on a daily basis.
Some others also argued that the silence of Washington regarding Pakistan's frequent rocket attacks on some border provinces of Afghanistan also contradicts with the bilateral security agreement, as it holds the U.S. responsible to support Afghanistan against such foreign attacks.
Under the agreement, the United States is committed to support Afghanistan if the country faces any serious external threat to its territory, but we have not seen any reaction of Washington to repeated Pakistani rocket attacks on our eastern provinces.
Although the deal highlights U.S. responsibilities in confronting foreign threats, it's better not to rely on such deals. The history has shown that players like the U.S. have always been after their own interests.
President Ashraf Ghani's government signed a deal with hope and optimism, as the agreement seemed promising for country's security. Almost 7 years later, some key political leaders in Afghanistan, including former President Hamid Karzai, unanimously described the bilateral security agreement with the U.S. as a futile platform as the country faces an increase in violence. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
That report wraps up our bulletin. Thank you for staying tuned.
Arabi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger, to let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately, to help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the most merciful.
Unity Week. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Welcome to the third part of the special series on Unity Week that spans 12th to 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal, marking the birthday anniversary of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Hope we will be true followers of him and to meet him in paradise. The Almighty has promised mercy on himself and spread it to the extent that it has engulfed the entire universe. But some people have deviated from the right path and have effectively deprived themselves of this divine mercy. However, the divine messengers try their best to guide mankind and return them back to divine mercy. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the most obvious figure amongst these divine messengers and the absolute symbol of divine mercy. The Almighty addressed him in Ayah 107 of Surah Anbiya as, "And we have not sent you but a mercy for the world." People, whether believers or disbelievers, enjoy the mercy of the Prophet of Islam. Yet some people benefited from him and were guided to the right path and towards salvation, whilst others stood up against him and fomented hostility towards Islam. The Almighty sent Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, for the salvation of the entire mankind. But some people, from the advent of his mission, didn't want to march in his path. This trend persisted until this day. God Almighty is the main source of guidance for mankind, but his training is manifested through the Prophet. In other words, the Prophet is his means of taking the people to light, guidance, and eternal salvation. The Noble Quran stresses that the Prophet of Islam was very kind and affectionate towards all the people. Ayah 159 of Surah Ali Imran tells the Prophet, "Thus, due to mercy from God, you have become lenient to them. While had you been tough and hard-hearted, they would have surely dispersed from around you." One of the miracles of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was that his indescribable mercy attracted the people to one another. Ayah 63 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran emphasizes that the Prophet could never unite people's hearts without each other if God didn't want this. But since the Almighty wishes, the Prophet succeeded. Ayah 63 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran reads, "And he united their hearts. Had you spent all that is on the earth, you could not have united them. Surely he is invincible and wise." Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, sought to establish a civilization on the basis of lofty morals. Even during war with the enemy, he did his best to guide all the disbelievers. He would do his best to invite the enemy to peace. Nevertheless, when there was no choice other than war, and the enemy was adamantly insisting on war, the Prophet would battle with the enemy. In other words, the Prophet's decision for military encounter was not out of revenge or grudge. In view of this, when he conquered Mecca, thousands of men, women, and children were expecting him to take revenge. Even one of the commanders of the Prophet's army ascended on top of a hill and cried out, "Today is the day of revenge." The Messenger of Mercy, though, being informed of this call, was very upset. He immediately sent Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, to take the banner from that man and announced that that day was indeed a day of mercy. Then he addressed the Quraysh tribe as the main inhabitants of Mecca. He said, "O group of Quraysh, how will I behave towards you, do you think?" They said, "O Messenger of God, we don't expect from you but goodness and good conduct." The Prophet then said, "Go, you are free to go, and nobody will disturb you." The Holy Prophet said this and issued the order of public clemency on Quraysh and the people of Mecca, despite their endless hostility towards him. He was the conqueror and victor, but didn't take the enemy captive, didn't kill anyone, and didn't loot the properties of the people of Mecca. This divine conduct of the Holy Prophet softened the hardest of hearts. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, would seize every opportunity to invite disbelievers and polytheists to Islam. Even when he took captives from the enemy, he used to guide them and treat them like a loving father. He would release many of the captives due to certain virtues in them. Yet, one of his conditions for releasing them was to teach illiterate Muslims how to read and how to write. Another prominent characteristic of those days in the early days of Islam, was the absence of spirit of brotherhood and friendship. Ethnic and tribal adversity and clashes and superstitious thoughts prevailed everywhere. But with the emergence of Islam and the Prophet's words and deeds, people got together and became brothers and close friends. The teachings of Islam created a balance between material and spiritual needs. This is the very thing that the current ideologies have failed to fulfill. The Irish intellectual and writer George Bernard Shaw predicted nearly 100 years ago that Islam and the thoughts of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, would conquer Europe, as the ultimate solution for the myriads of problems of the modern man that has been beset by excessive materialism.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
European News Bulletin.
This is News Bulletin. My name is Mina Taylor, and we're coming to you from London. Now we move straight to our top story. Emotions continue to run deep as mourners and representatives of different faiths gathered at the Notre Dame Church in Nice to mourn three people killed on Thursday.
We're used to facing challenges. This one is particularly tragic. It's a challenge that we have to live through in our hearts, in our bodies, in our emotions. We must stand up, our entire society, for the entire city of Nice and for France. We must move on and stand united against those who want to divide us.
The attack came just 2 weeks after a French teacher was killed in Paris after showing students a blasphemous Charlie Hebdo cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad. Many, however, feel the latest attack came as a result of the political discourse in France, often described as racist and Islamophobic, targeting all Muslims and not just those with a violent Takfiri ideology. Anger has spread across the Islamic world with protests and boycotts of French goods, as Muslims condemn French President Emmanuel Macron for pouring fuel on the fire and not taking measures to dampen emotions. Muslims have gathered outside the French embassy here in London to join the global movement to condemn President Macron for supporting insults against Islam's holy prophet Muhammad. Our correspondent Robert Carter headed down to the embassy to see just how hurtful the French insults have been for British Muslims.
Outside the French embassy in London, angered British Muslims gathered to vent their frustrations.
The protest comes amid rising violence in France over the ongoing debate of freedom of speech versus freedom to insult.
This is just one of the many protests taking place across the Muslim world. Muslims are indeed angry over what they say is deep insult by Western society led by France against Islam and its holiest figures. France claims that it's defending freedom of speech, but Muslims say that they feel indiscriminately persecuted in France and are targeted relentlessly by Western political leaders and by media sources too.
The focus of the anger was squarely pointed on the French president for his passionate defense of anti-Islam insults.
First and foremost, he needs to apologize and he needs to make a law that freedom of speech should have some limits. This is not freedom of speech. If I come and say to your father, if I started swearing at him, do you think that is freedom of speech? That's not. In the whole world, there are 1.7 billion Muslims. They will be ready to sacrifice their life in the name of Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. That the message should be very clear.
However, protesters also made clear why defending the Prophet is so important.
It insults us, it insults the entire Ummah, the entire 1.7, if not more, billion people around the globe, because our Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is closer to our hearts. He is more dear to us than the entire world, our family, our parents, children, whoever it may be. Anyone in this world does not compare to our Prophet beloved Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Not only is it just disrespectful, it's just the mere fact that I wouldn't do that to anyone else in religion, or mock it in any kind of form, or like, let alone do such an outrageous move, especially if you're in such a position of power. It's not only just disrespectful, it makes me feel quite hurt.
And the fact they disrespected us while doing nothing, this is really disrespectful. And that's why we're here. We're here to prove that we're here for our Prophet. Because without our Prophet, we're nothing. We wouldn't be Muslims. And I'm very proud to be Muslim. Alhamdulillah. The Prophet means everything. And the Prophet must mean everything. Because he... I adore him more than mom, my dad, my siblings, everyone that I love. Because he is the reason that I'm Muslim. He is the reason that I'm going to go to Jannah, heaven. He is everything to me.
Muslim resentment against France is still growing. Will Macron finally back down or choose to stand by his anti-Islam policies? The answer for now still remains unclear. Robert Carter, London.
Former British opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn has vowed to fight his suspension from the Labour Party after he refused to retract his comments following a report into anti-Semitism in Labour, this by the UK's Equality and Human Rights Commission.
What I'll be doing is appealing to the party and those that have made this decision to kindly think again. All I've done is pointed out that this terrible issue of anti-Semitism does exist, and anyone that has anti-Semitic views has no place in the Labour movement or the Labour Party. And we have to deal with it. That is why I set up a process to deal with it.
The report made no recommendations and did not find institutional anti-Semitism in the party, but said that there were two cases that would constitute a failure of leadership. Corbyn acknowledged the report's findings, but concluded that claims of widespread anti-Semitism were overstated for media and political reasons. This angered party officials, including leader Sir Keir Starmer, who took the final decision to suspend Corbyn. Now, for more analysis, we have London's former mayor, Ken Livingston, with us. Ken, good to see you here. Your reaction to Jeremy Corbyn's suspension, sir?
Well, what Jeremy Corbyn said is simply stating the truth. We had a small number of people with anti-Semitic views in the Labour Party under Jeremy's leadership, about 300 out of 500,000 members, and he had them investigated and expelled. He sorted the problem out. The idea that the Labour Party would be institutionally anti-Semitic is ridiculous. We were the main homeland for Jewish voters for over a century. We had more Jewish MPs than every other party put together. And, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn I mean, we've been together, working together for 50 years, challenging every form of racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia. And this was all about, as Jeremy said, undermining him, getting rid of him, because the establishment fear a socialist being elected. Just look what was said about Bernie Sanders when he was running for the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. He was depicted as a communist. Well, actually, I mean, he was no more than what we would call a liberal.
Now, Ken, you were name-checked in this report. First of all, do you know why and how that linked to Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, no, this is what's so outrageous. I mean, the report smears me, implies I'm anti-Semitic, but it doesn't give any detail. It doesn't just refer to a single thing I've ever said or done which is anti-Semitic. And also, even more outrageous, to produce a report like this without interviewing me and questioning me. But you see, all of this started, you know, 4.5 years ago when the then Labour MP, John Mann, had a television camera filming him shouting in my face I was a Nazi apologist, then launching this big lie that I'd said Hitler was a Zionist. And even yesterday, when I was being interviewed by a TV crew, they were saying, why did you say Hitler was a Zionist? I think, well, how long does this lie go on around the world?
Now, when it comes to these kinds of accusations, you were very clear there about your personal stance. But we want to know, why are we still defending the Labour Party here? Have they not shown that this perhaps is not the home for true leftists in this country?
Well, no, it is. I mean, and literally, although I disagree with Keir Starmer suspending Jeremy Corbyn, I think Keir Starmer can win the next general election, but also he is genuinely a socialist. I mean, if you look at his past, his manifesto when he was running for Labour leader, and I think he could be the most competent Labour Prime Minister since the Attlee government of 1945. And although I disagree with him about what he's done with Jeremy, I will work all I can to get him into Downing Street at the next election.
So there will be no Ken Livingstone Corbyn breakaway movement?
Of course not. Jeremy's made absolutely clear. Everyone stay in the party, work to get beyond this. Because basically, I think this issue, all these allegations about anti-Semitism, are now likely to fade away. Keir Starmer's going to focus on the economy and the mess that Boris Johnson's government is making in Britain. And that's what we've got to focus on and do. I mean, at the time of the next general election, I'm going to be 80 years old. Jeremy will be about 77 or 78. We're just two old age pensioners. We'll do a bit of canvassing.
Now, of course, there's no getting away from the fact that this move has angered a lot of trade unionists. They've angered a lot of people on the left. Keir Starmer clearly needs to bring the party together, bring people back into the fold. How might he do this?
Well, I think what defines my perspective of Keir Starmer, when he first got the nomination to stand for Parliament, about the first thing he did, he asked to come and see me and get my advice about how to be an MP, what to do and all that. So I think this man is genuinely Labour. And this has been a huge... He inherited this mess about anti-Semitism. I mean, Jeremy should have been much firmer in stamping down on all these lies and smears back when I was suspended 4.5 years ago. But I think we now put it behind us and focus on the serious issues about the economy, our welfare state, the neglect of our NHS, and get this ghastly government out.
There is, of course, the very delicate point here that still needs to be clarified. Where is the line between criticizing Israeli policies and anti-Semitism? Because we do know, unless this is made really clear, we're going to have a lot of other members falling foul of this grey area or this made-up situation.
Well, I mean, basically all my life, I mean, I've watched anyone who criticizes the policies of the Israeli government about their mistreatment of the Palestinians gets denounced as anti-Semitic. This is just an attempt by the Israeli government to shut down any criticism of their policy. And all I'd say to the Israeli government is this. We're now over 70 years since the State of Israel was created. The problem of the millions of Palestinian refugees still is there. And the Israeli government needs to reach out to the Palestinians and resolve it. And tragically, that almost happened 25 years ago when the then Israeli MP, Prime Minister, did a deal with Yasser Arafat. And I remember thinking, we're on the first step to resolving this problem. But then, of course, an extreme right-wing supporter of Benjamin Netanyahu party murdered him, assassinated him, and since then we haven't had that progress. So it's possible to reach out and do that deal, and I urge the Israeli government to do it.
Strong words there, Ken Livingston. Thank you, as always. And it's to Russia we go now, where the country's daily tally of coronavirus cases has surged to a record high of over 18,000, taking the national total close to 1.6 million cases since the start of the pandemic. Authorities have also reported 355 deaths in the past 24 hours, bringing the official death toll to over 27,500. However, residents in Moscow who want Russia's newly developed Sputnik V vaccine might be able to do so from as early as next month. So far, 2,500 people, primarily doctors and teachers, have already been vaccinated. Now, France has once again entered a national COVID lockdown. Non-essential shops have been shuttered and people have been told to work from home wherever possible. But restrictions are slightly less strict than during the country's two-month shutdown in the spring, with schools scheduled to reopen next week. The measures will last until at least December the 1st, with anyone leaving their homes required to carry a special document or otherwise face fines. To Spain now, where the country's parliament has voted in favor of extending a nationwide state of emergency by 6 months, thereby giving regional authorities extra powers to control a second wave of the coronavirus. Spain is one of Europe's worst COVID-19 hotspots, with over 3 million infections. Its response to the pandemic has often been hampered by political wranglings, but the government has managed to gather enough votes to extend the emergency powers. However, some local authorities have been heavily criticized for harsher restrictions and penalties on areas with migrants and low incomes. Robert Inlakesh, we cannot escape the two major stories of the day, especially if you are of faith or, in fact, none. Could you kick us off with your first choice, please?
The first one we're going to look at here is Sir Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party at this time, defending the suspension of Jeremy Corbyn over anti-Semitism and this new anti-Semitism report that has come out. And basically what we've seen from this is that the coup is complete of removing Jeremy Corbyn, also his allies from the Labour Party. And what we need to understand about this is that it is little to do with anti-Semitism, as it has been pointed out online, and more to do with basically people who are anti-war, who are pro-Palestinian, who are anti-corporations, who want socialist-leaning policies to go through. And so we see that the Blairite establishment inside of the Labour Party has conspired against Jeremy Corbyn and his allies. And of course, Zionist supporters of Israel inside of the United Kingdom, have conjured up these claims of anti-Semitism. They first did that, and then the entire establishment jumped on board to push this line because it was a stick to beat Jeremy Corbyn and his allies with. And he got too close, I believe that's what they viewed in their opinion. He got too close to a position of power, having someone who is going to implement socialist policies, someone who is going to be holding Israel accountable for its war crimes. And so, of course, they pull out the anti-Semitism stick to beat him with. Ultimately, what this is going to do is this is going to cause more anti-Semitism, because what they do is they conflate anti-Zionism and anti-Israel sentiment with anti-Semitism. And of course, when you do that, you sort of blur the lines. And so people see that it's all sort of free for all on Jewish people at this point, because they say, well, it doesn't really exist at this point. That's what it does. It brings forward anti-Semitism, and when you start claiming that Israel represents all Jewish people, then all the crimes of Israel are put onto Jewish people.
Let's be very clear about this. Jeremy Corbyn was not suspended from the Labour Party because of any of the actions highlighted in this report, but because he didn't walk back the comments he made in reference to this report and the original claims here, and he stood by that decision. What makes this so unique in your own mind, Robert Inlakesh, about the reason, the very scurrilous, tenuous reason that I believe he's been singled out for and suspended?
Well, what makes this so severe is the fact that anybody who is going to speak up on Palestinian rights now has to extra police their language when it comes to the issue. And we're talking about the most racist regime on earth when we're talking about Israel. We're talking about a regime which is ethnically cleansing people, which takes a racist, anti-Islam line on pretty much every single issue, and is murdering people and committing an ongoing incremental genocide in the case of the Gaza Strip. So when we talk about racism, there is no place which is worse when it comes to racism than Israel. But now we're having to police our language here in the United Kingdom for fear, especially in the Labour Party now, for fear of offending people who are racist. So that is one of the biggest takeaways from this, is that if you are going to stand up for Palestinian rights, you are going to have your political career taken away from you. If you're a journalist, you're going to be silenced. Your life is going to be destroyed. You're going to be smeared as a racist for being an anti-racist.
The irony has not escaped us. What's been the online reaction, Rob?
The first one we pulled up here is from low-key political rapper. He says, "This is the coup. Where do you stand?" We've got another one commenting here as well from Hamed on Twitter. He says, "The fake world we live in. If you criticize the brutal Israeli government and support Palestinians and their freedom to fight anti-Semitism, and in France, the French president's remarks about Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and Islam is fine and allowed, is part of freedom of speech." We got another one here as well from Jim Bolton, who says, "I'm shocked by the actions of an unelected party official to suspend the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn. It must be lifted immediately if elected to the NEC. I'll table a notion to overturn Jeremy's suspension at our first meeting."
Just a quick kind of devil's advocate position here. Do you sincerely believe that Sir Keir Starmer felt he had no option but to make a token gesture here? So he suspends Jeremy Corbyn, there is a hearing, Jeremy Corbyn is reinstated, we consider the matter closed and we move on.
Well, he's benefited directly from this coup of Jeremy Corbyn, and when it comes to it, I mean, he wouldn't want to feel a full victim to a coup himself if he was to take similar positions to that of Jeremy Corbyn. So being implicated in it, of course, he has a vested interest in pushing this. And on top of that, when it comes down to it, and looking like at the issues of anti-Semitism, why isn't he looking at the issues of Islamophobia or anti-black racism inside the Labour Party? Because all of these issues are going on. There are individuals, members of the Labour Party, who do say anti-Semitic, anti-black, anti-Muslim things all the time. We know this. This is just something which exists. And so why single out anti-Semitism and do all this gesturing, this over-the-top gesturing, by getting rid of Jeremy Corbyn?
All right, so we move from Islamophobia, anti-Palestine sentiments, claims of anti-Semitism, and we go over to France, where we talk about Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and other issues. I mean, bring it up to speed for us, Rob.
Of course, everyone watching this is probably familiar with what is currently going down in France in terms of the crackdown on Muslims throughout the country. Of course, there was the terrorist attack yesterday as well. And this has only heightened the far-right extremism against Muslims inside of France. But the question that's being pulled up here is, why is it that anti-Semitism is completely unacceptable, as it should be, inside of France? For instance, you can't deny the Holocaust inside of France. And, you know, they say it's freedom of opinion and all things, but on this you cannot have freedom of opinion. So if you have one rule for one group of people, why is it that in the case of Muslims it seems to be a free-for-all? Even the Armenian genocide also is an offense to deny it. We know that France, they try and say that there's a separation of religion and state, but yet Emmanuel Macron has basically weaponized the hatred of Muslims in the country, so politicized religion inside of the country for a political aim. So he's actually using religion in the name of getting rid of religion out of politics and stopping extremism. He's causing more extremism on the right. He's isolating Muslims more. It's open season. On top of this, if we're talking about freedom of speech, why are they pushing anti-BDS legislation? Why are they stopping pro-Palestinian human rights rallies, for instance, like they've done in the past? And so there is a double standard which exists there, which many people are pointing out. If you have one rule for one group of people, why do you have another rule for another group of people? Do you have a fully secular state when you can go out and do these sort of things for one group of people but not the other? I mean, what are the principles that you are sticking by? You have to be consistent.
So you believe a lot of this inconsistency is about Macron recognizing that there are votes to be won here?
Absolutely. It seems that that is the case in the country, that he's playing to a base. And he's using Muslims at the moment, and he's cracking down on Muslims. And we see the reaction worldwide from this. If he wanted to stop violence, both against Muslims by far-right extremists and also from extremists who identify as Muslim, who are going to attack the French public, why do the things that he's been doing? You are putting the French people in a position where it's more likely that they're going to be attacked, whether they be Muslim or non-Muslim, from either side of this. You are exacerbating the issue when before it wasn't existing there. Where were these attacks months ago, before this whole thing happened, before he delivered his speech talking about Islam is in crisis and Islamist separatists, in his words, in the country, and talking about cracking down and then endorsing these insulting depictions of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It didn't exist before this at such a large scale, but now he's exacerbating the issue, and he's putting his own population in harm's way, as well as his own Muslim population in harm's way, and targeting them.
Indeed. Quick social media reaction here, Robert.
First one we have here says, Islamophobic violence. Muslims in France right now are being beaten and stabbed because the president decided to blame all Muslims for someone's crimes. He even mocked our prophet. A lot of mosques are being taken down, etc. And there's no media coverage about this at all. We've got another one here as well from Pam OB, a Twitter account. They say, I think it's very important for Muslims to denounce the Nice attacks. All Muslims need to apologize. And in reply to that, we have another one here from Yasser who says, using that logic, please condemn the Iraq War, slavery, the Vietnam War, European occupation of Africa, drone strikes, ethnic cleansing of Native Americans, etc.
Indeed. Strong words. Thank you very much, Robert. And that is where we leave the broadcast for tonight. Good night.
Limelight.